I was finding it just like my spark was faded, and I felt tired. I don't even quite think it was burnout, though. I think it was a longing for something else, and almost like education had burned really brightly for me and felt really meaningful. And it just, it's like the ember started going out. And I remember, you know, sitting in therapy and feeling this sense of frustration in fall 2019, like truly the visual I had was kind of feeling cold, sitting in a misty, foggy scene where I couldn't see even more than a few feet ahead of me, and feeling so frustrated because I just wanted to know, like, what is next and what is going to motivate me? That sense of rudderlessness of like, and the in-between space, I think is so interesting. And I think it is when we're unclear on purpose that comes up. But yeah, it's like, I didn't want to move in any particular direction too aggressively and be working towards the wrong thing and get too lost along the way. And I actually think that's a great thing to do. And I could have done that, but I really wanted to hold back and stay in that uncomfortable in-between space as I was figuring out what was underneath the education piece or that feeling of uncertainty or lack of motivation. What was underneath all of that?
Hey everyone, and welcome to Lighter Impact, the podcast that explores the intersection of social impact, somatics, and spirituality. Whether you're an entrepreneur, activist, or simply someone looking to make a difference, this podcast will provide you with insights and tools needed to make an impact in the world and feel lighter doing it. So sit back, relax, and let's see where this journey takes us. Welcome, everyone, to a new episode with Julia Firestone, a transformational coach who partners with social impact do-gooders and troublemakers to help them find their unique spark, take up space, and thrive. She works with clients to uncover and overcome what's holding them back, so they can create a life that aligns with their vision and values. Her approach to coaching centers around the belief that much more is possible than we can currently imagine, and she uses a toolkit of culturally conscious coaching pathways, empowering questions, playfulness, humor, and deep listening to support clients to uncover longings in life and take intentional action towards their biggest goals. With a background in nonprofits, corporate social impact, innovation, and startups, Julia understands the challenges and opportunities that come with forging a new path. Julia, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me, Vison. It's such an honor to be here with you.
To kick things off, I want to start off with a question that I ask all guests, which is, how has your understanding of making an impact changed over time?
It has changed a lot. So I love this question. In the family I grew up in and the types of conversations, you know, I always had with my parents growing up, I was very motivated to live a life that had some significant focus around positive impact in the world. And I remember as early as eighth grade in middle school, we were doing big group projects, or actually we're doing individual projects, and could choose any topic we wanted. It was, you know, research project. And I wanted to study hate crimes in America, the history of racism in this country, of homophobia, of anti-Semitism, of so many horrible things that were, you know, and continue to be really core to U.S. history and culture, and you know, indigenous violence towards indigenous peoples here. And so I remember through that work noticing that perhaps that interest was a little bit different from what my peers were focused on. But I think what I notice when I think back to my understanding of impact early on is that so much of it was really driven by a sort of white savior complex. What I mean by that is I think my inclination towards working in impact came from my own guilt about privilege, about being the beneficiary of so much access and opportunity and privilege, and feeling the sense of responsibility to be someone who contributed in a positive way. A lot of that then also came back to self-sacrifice and feelings of, you know, my life should in no way be worth more than any other life in the world. And we know from the work that we do and even, you know, lopsided journalism, we know that that's not how the value of lives are treated in practice. And so I had this really kind of, I guess, guilt-driven take on impact, in the sense that, you know, I should give everything I've got and try to go to where the greatest need was. That was really my orientation to impact, you know, until my early 20s, I would say. And I think we'll probably get more into that journey throughout our conversation. But I think through my own experiences, getting to know activists in the world, understanding how many people had been working, you know, towards equity, justice, fairness in the world long before me, I think I got a lot more humble about how significant a role I could play. And some of that white savior complex is also about the glory, right? And the kind of recognition and being celebrated and seen as someone who makes an impact. And I think I won't say that that's totally gone, being realistic, but I think there's just, I have a much more kind of humble understanding of how much impact I as one person realistically makes, which isn't to say I'm like, oh, I'm not going to try, but it's understanding that we work as a collective and that no one person is changing everything. I think also understanding time in a really different way than I used to, where I had, you know, sort of a like warrior, let's go kind of attitude. And I think now I see, yes, there are times where we must be incredibly urgent because there is conflict happening, there is violence happening, and we can't wait to say something or do something. And zooming out for the big picture, there's so much change that even, you know, us being relatively young people in the world, there are things that won't change even in our own lifetimes. And so, yeah, I think coming with a more humble and nuanced approach to impact is a real shift that I've gone through and continue to explore and examine in my own approach to impact.
Thank you for sharing that so vulnerably and honestly, because to acknowledge that there is this white savior complex must not be easy. To have that level of introspection. So first of all, like, kudos to you for doing that introspection, and then thank you for sharing it so honestly. I want to ask, you know, you said that it was this white savior complex, or that, like, this guilt, which is one way of understanding it. But how could making an impact actually be serving you? Like, in what ways was there something that you needed that took you on this path and keeps you on this path?
Yeah, that's I think a lovely, more generous interpretation. I can definitely be a little bit hard on myself, but I do think the white savior complex is real, and particularly, I'll come back to your question, but I think particularly from my own experience, what that really was about was hiding behind my Jewish identity to not own the benefits of whiteness that I was receiving. And I think once I understood, you know, yes, that my family had been immigrants to this country in the late 1800s, early 1900s, hadn't always had it easy, right? And there had been this really challenging history in the family and in parts of the family, that I was still benefiting from this white supremacy culture that existed in this country. And so I think that's where some of that recognition, that acknowledgement comes from. And I think it's really important, especially for those of us who have worked in more kind of global development spaces, to acknowledge that that's present for us personally. So that's where that, it's even without being incredibly judgmental of myself, it actually doesn't carry a charge for me to talk about that. It's sort of just feels like it's a neutral fact. And so I think, yeah, the more we can speak openly about it, the more we allow others to acknowledge it and hopefully start to shift that sector more as well.
I do believe that when we go out to make an impact in the world and to save the world, right, it's, we think we're doing it to help others, but it's really driven by a force within us, something that we ourselves need for our own individual path, something that our soul needs. So I'm curious of what that longing or that searching might have been for you in the social impact space.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, so much of it was early on, you know, just about meaning and yes, hopefully doing things that receive praise or seen as positive by others, and you know, there's a part of that that's just feeling loved and appreciated in a global context. And part of it, you know, if I'm really honest, part of kind of purpose and what nourished me, what continues to nourish me about impact work, is just curiosity and interest. And there was a time early on, and this was even kind of during college, when I was very interested in conflict studies and trying to understand, you know, even in high school, I took a genocide studies class, which I was really lucky to have at my school and had a great teacher, and it was sort of the first class that I was just really engrossed in, and so much struggling to understand this core question of how we as humans can do such horrible things to each other. And it was a philosophical question that I think was and continues to be so core to my own purpose. Is there's like an intellectual hunger there to understanding that, but also looking for antidotes to or answers to that core question.
Yeah, what a relevant question that is, especially during these times, with what's happening in Gaza at the moment, to just struggle to understand how we as humans can do horrible things to each other. And I can see how that might have also been driven by your own history and by what your own ancestors had gone through. Yeah. And it's so beautiful, because like when we are authentic and when we search from this place of all lives are valuable, and how did people do this to my ancestors? Like, these are very fundamental questions. And I guess I'm tearing up right now because at this moment, like, co-solidarity feels so important for me as a Palestinian. To remember that, yeah, humans have been doing horrible things to each other for a very long time. And just remembering and knowing, or being reminded, I think, is the more accurate term, of just so many of us are confused by it. We aren't even actively trying to debunk it. Like, so many people are just confused by how are we allowing these things to happen.
That's so true. And I think it's hard to separate purpose from our own identities. And it's also that identity. This is something I've spoken with other Jewish friends about too, who understand that it is exactly, precisely because of that history of violence being done to our ancestors, that it ought to be so obvious that we cannot or should not be the bearers of such violence. And so there's a real grief too around what it means to be of intergenerational trauma and violence. And now have an identity of perpetrators of violence. It's a hard thing, but I think something so important for us to acknowledge right now. And I don't have an answer, right, to why we as humans can treat one another with such dehumanizing behavior and violence. And, you know, I don't know if it just goes back to selfishness or power or, you know, wealth. I mean, those reasons just feel so, it just feels so flimsy.
I've been reexamining so many areas in my own life where I am complicit in harm. And again, bringing this back to the idea of we are on our own journey. And yes, it might take us into the social impact space, and it might not. But at the end of the day, it is about this recalibration, this like finding alignment internally for what our soul is here to do. Which brings me to the topic of today, this idea of like, what is my purpose? What is my purpose? It's a question that's Googled very frequently. Yeah, there was a period of my life where I was obsessed with this question of what is my purpose? And I know that as a social impact coach, you have also heard this question a lot. So I'd love to hear your perspective on the question overall, and then in your personal life, how do you understand this topic?
So first, I'm going to frame this in a light, kind of playful way, which is I don't believe in soulmates. I am very much in love with my partner, and there's a soulmate vibe there, but I think we can have many loves in our lives as humans. And I think those loves can also be friendship and, you know, so many different types of relationships. And I think of purpose in a similar way. For most of us, right, there are some people out there who are singularly focused and driven and connected to one particular purpose their entire lives. I think for the vast majority of us, we go through different chapters and phases and iterations, and that's okay. I think just as a starting point, it can make us feel not so good if we're not sure what that purpose is. And so I think ensuring that we're not treating purpose as something that's always crystal clear or consistent frees up some flexibility to explore and stay curious and enjoy also the in between the journey of finding what purpose looks like at different stages of life. And in terms of my own experience with purpose, when I was younger, as I was saying earlier, you know, so much of my purpose was finding the greatest suffering in the world and trying to provide healing or fix. So, you know, I think that was my pull towards violent conflict settings. You know, I had this idea at one point that I was going to be a therapist for former child soldiers. That was sort of that was one iteration of, you know, what my, I guess that's almost more of like what my career could have been. But I think, you know, so much of it was around maximizing my own usefulness, my like utility. And the funny thing is, I was so drawn to being useful and reaching those who were suffering the most. And I could not get a job in a conflict setting. You wouldn't think it was so competitive, but when I graduated from undergrad, it was wildly competitive to live and work in a refugee camp or an internally displaced persons camp, to operate in the field in conflict settings. I couldn't do it, you know, and at the height of looking for that, I was offered instead a fellowship working with cashew farmers in Ghana, which I said no to, but I was like, no, this is the antithesis of what I want to be focused on. And now I'm like, oh, wow, the labor around cashews would have been so interesting, but I didn't really see the connection there at the time. But I think when I struggled to even break into that field, I kind of came back to my own roots in my family, growing up with parents who were in the education field. And that education was part of my DNA. I had been interested in education in conflict settings. And so I just started coming back to education and exploring what that would look like, and spent almost 10 years in the education field in a variety of ways, in global nonprofits, sometimes working with a bit of technology, but trying to do that to really maximize the experience for students and teachers locally, and give local autonomy. It wasn't mine to give, but ensure there was local autonomy. And then moving into corporate social impact, where I was also focused on education and literacy, especially. And for that near decade, I was really energized by education. And there was just, it felt like, because education, you know, like healthcare or, you know, so many other areas, that there's so much you can connect it to. Like, you can talk about education in conflict settings. You can talk about, you know, schools as places where you can administer healthcare, or share about gender equality, where you can, you know, create access to opportunity and belonging. And so I did really see a lot that was very exciting and energizing in the education space. And at some point, somewhere around that 9-10 year mark, I just felt sort of I sometimes talk about being in the fog or being in the muck. I just felt this thing settle around me where I was not getting energy or motivation around education as a topic anymore. And I worked with my own therapist, with a coach, talked to friends, and, you know, really took a while. Probably a year, maybe more, to figure out. And at that time, I was actually working in corporate innovation and strategy. And I loved the kind of methodologies I was working with. I was running innovation sprint teams and training colleagues around the world in design thinking and rapid prototyping. And it was fun, you know, methodology wise, but there was no kind of impact focus. So I think that actually opened up space for me to start getting curious around purpose. And it took a while. It was the kind of thing, as I think it often is, where it was like right at the tip of my nose and I just couldn't see it because it was so close. But the thing that really, I started realizing I was both interested in so many impact issues and seeing, you know, urgency around climate, attacks on LGBTQIA+ rights, anti-Black legislation coming through in the US constantly. And just, there were so many issues that I felt sort of overwhelmed and feeling like, I have to pick one as my next purpose, my next area. And I realized actually that I was sort of issue agnostic, not that I didn't care about the issue. These are all issues that I've mentioned that are really meaningful to me, but I felt very connected to being of service to the leaders across all of those fields and the kind of next generation of leaders as well. And rather than focusing in on just education, seeing how all of these issues are, you know, like Dr. Kimberly Crenshaw says, very intersectional. But also if we can support the leaders in each of these areas, then we can have a greater impact ultimately, is sort of my theory of change. And I think also really how I think about purpose for myself now.
So I have this theory that purpose isn't what we do. So it's not a doing energy, but it's a being energy. And I'm curious, what was that, if you were to reflect on the 10 years in the education space and since then, you know, transitioning into a social impact coach, like what is the who, the being, the purpose that you carry with you in the world as you move through all areas of life?
I love that so much. And almost that calling in to like, okay, so you've given me your resume and so I appreciate that. There's such a clear through line for me in all of this, which is I'm so fascinated by people. I love meeting people. I love talking to people. I'd say pretty much anyone who interacts with me can usually expect that I'll recommend they connect with at least one other person who I know. And that was true, you know, within the education space, I was doing a lot of partnerships work. I did community building, even running those innovation sprint teams, right? It was about building teams where people felt a sense of belonging and felt safe and heard and connected. And so without a doubt, you know, that is completely central to who I am and how I try to show up in the world, is seeing that if we are more interconnected, if we are spending time with people who see us for our full selves, who create space for us to grow, and if we are, you know, finding that joyful connection and kind of sense of play with each other, then gosh, like the ripples of impact we can create are just infinite. And so for me, it all stems from that, you know, creating a sense of belonging and connection.
That's so beautiful. And, you know, going back to high school in the genocide class and asking, how can people allow this to happen? What's happening on the individual level? And how can we as people start to work towards a different world? So balancing the being and the doing, I did find something really fascinating, which was when you said that I wasn't getting energized anymore from education. Can you talk a little bit more about following the energy and how that's tied or not tied to purpose.
Yeah, and I also really love what you talked about in your previous question, you know, about being versus doing. And sometimes in, I think the way we talk about purpose, we might say like, I'm an education person and that's my purpose. And I think it's so limiting. But in terms of that experience of the sense of energy fading, I mean, it's quite literal for me. And I would love to know if others experience this similarly, if you have too, Bisan. But, you know, quite literally, I find it harder to focus on reading articles about that topic or getting excited about building connected communities around education. Or, I mean, and this is, I'm saying in the present tense, but this was in, you know, around 2019, 2020, I was finding it just like my spark was faded and I felt tired. I don't even quite think it was burnout though. I think it was a longing for something else. And almost like education had burned really brightly for me and felt really meaningful. And it just, it's like the ember started going out. And I remember, you know, sitting in therapy and feeling this sense of frustration in fall 2019, like truly the visual I had was kind of feeling cold, sitting in a misty, foggy scene where I couldn't see even more than a few feet ahead of me and feeling so frustrated because I just wanted to know, like, what is next and what is going to motivate me? That sense of rudderlessness of like, and the in-between space, I think is so interesting. And I think it is when we're unclear on purpose, that comes up. But yeah, it's like I didn't want to move in any particular direction too aggressively and be working towards the wrong thing, or, you know, sort of just to keep metaphors rolling, you know, be climbing the wrong mountain, and get too lost along the way. And I actually think that's a great thing to do. And I could have done that, but I really wanted to hold back and stay in that uncomfortable in-between space as I was figuring out, you know, what was underneath the education piece or that feeling of uncertainty or lack of motivation. What was underneath all of that? And it really took some time to get clear on it.
And I mean, this is pretty much what you help clients with, right? As they're transitioning, as they're starting to, maybe as they're struggling in that foggy area and they can't see what lays ahead, to be able to imagine the possibilities and connect with their purpose and figure out what that next step is. So can you talk a little bit more about how your journey and what you learned in this transition is similar to what you help clients go through?
I remain so, and I've talked about it a few times, so fascinated by in-between spaces. And I think when I was going through that transition, what I really would have benefited from is a coach who I was meeting with, you know, every other week or even every week, just to explore and acknowledge that in-betweenness that felt really uncomfortable. And it was helpful having therapy, but I think a coach has a different set of tools that can move us forward, but also unpack. Yeah, I really wished I'd had a coach at that time. And I also felt like there's something so beautiful about, you know, being with someone on that precipice, looking into the fog and holding their hand and asking, what do you need? And what are your unmet needs? And just those simple questions can feel like such a gift. And I did, you know, during that time, I actually went, I attended a retreat for the first time, like really invested in myself. And I went to Bali on a retreat led by my now dear friend, Hannah Chung, who runs Reboot Experiences. And it was such a great experience. And even just the act of treating myself to that felt so nourishing and so positive. I tried surfing for the first time, and Hannah was a great surf teacher. And but I really came back from that, you know, also motivated to kind of do what she was doing. I realized I want to be an entrepreneur, and I don't really know who my sort of ideal audience is just yet. And it, you know, I continue to iterate there, but I just knew I want to be able to be really creative and try stuff and I keep using the word too, but be more playful in the work I do and bring this whole bag full of cool innovation stuff I've been doing along with me into my business. All that to say, I love being there for people, for the clients I work with as they navigate that challenge. And I will also say, at earlier in between spaces in my career, when I was trying to figure out what was next, the best part was always being in community with people who shared my values. And some of the people I count as my closest friends now are people who I, you know, were part of my networking efforts during a career transition in 2014-15, where people I grabbed a coffee with and just said, hey, what's your career been like? Who are you? What matters to you? I started running a sort of networking group for people in social impact too, and met people through that. But it really just brought me back to, you know, how can I as a coach be present for someone through that transition of, you know, like you have said, you know, purpose being about being and soul yearning, being there to support someone through that process of uncovering and being really painfully honest with ourselves about what's underneath all the expectations of others, all of the shoulds, all of the, you know, oh no, have I wasted time doing these other things? Like, what is really, really true?
The thing about transitions is they can be very scary. Mm. There's, you know, the way we have done things, who we have been in the past. Sometimes it is a being, right, in these transitions. And then you're transitioning to a new space of possibility. Yeah, and it can be scary. And sometimes people do get stuck there for a long time. So what advice do you have for someone who might be feeling stuck, might be in this place with all of the fog, and a lot of time is passing? A lot of time is passing as they're feeling stuck and maybe too afraid to make that transition.
Yeah. Well, I really think part of what can be hard about purpose too is we have this sense that it's something so big and so concrete and so clear, and this notion that everyone else knows their purpose. And so when you're in that in-between space or feeling stuck, it can feel awful, not only because you don't know, but because there's an assumption that everyone else does know. And that purpose is something so big and so consistent and concrete that if you don't know it, you are almost without an identity too. And I think there can be a lot of grief in that as well. If you did previously have a sense of why you were here, what you were working towards, what you're contributing to. But what I would encourage for anyone who is in that place is to shift away from that macro level sense of purpose and come back to the smallest micro moments you can. And in the course of one day, notice what are the small notice what are the small experiences or just parts of your day that feel good. And start to make some notes. You know, I've never been a consistent journaler, but during those times of transition or being in the fog, I get really into it. And there's so much we can start to notice in terms of patterns if we begin from a really small space, really small, what feels good, what feels even just a little bit energizing, where it piques a little bit of curiosity. And, you know, for me, as an example, had I done that, I probably would have noticed that when I spend time with other people, when I connect people who I love and admire to each other, when I lead workshops, even if it's not on a topic that I love, but the act of curating a container for human beings to feel a sense of belonging and connection, all of those things are incredibly energizing to me. And I still think it would have taken just as long to actually get to understanding that underlying purpose around connection and belonging. But it feels a lot less unstable, I think. There's some sense of grounding if you're just noticing the kind of micro moments in your day. And I think on the flip side too, noticing what is draining, what is particularly feeling bad or making you feel small or draining your energy in the course of a day. And that can give you a lot of information too.
Yeah, there's that quote, what the world needs is more people who come alive. And, you know, when you said that my spark was faded, I could feel that in my heart. Like, how painful is that? And I don't think we were conditioned enough or socialized enough to value that spark that we have inside of us. And as I've gotten older, I'm like, this is worth like all the degrees in the world or like all the achievements and the promotions. It's just like to feel excited for life, the possibilities to feel connected is just such a blessing. And it's, you know, without it, without that spark, we're missing out. We're missing out on life, on living life.
Absolutely. And I really want to normalize that many, if not most of us, go through those times.
Of course. Of course.
Yes. And so I think it's also really helpful if you're there to know that there's nothing wrong with you. Yeah. That this is a very kind of like a healthy moment of iteration, you know, almost like I think of a metaphor of indigenous practices around fire in the forest and how you actually do the controlled burns in order to prevent the larger fires. And we might even think about it in a similar way that, you know, this is your moment for controlled burn. And like what needs to be cleared so that you can come back to what is really true for you.
Exactly. And I know for myself, it took a lot of unlearning to prioritize the spark and driven by periods of no spark, which I still experience, right? So I totally agree with normalizing the periods of no spark and valuing the spark when we do have it in whatever areas it comes in.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think if I think about the sensation of having that spark, it does feel akin to love.
Mm. Yes.
And just, yeah, allowing yourself, because I think we sometimes get scared too of like feeling that sensation of love and appreciation for what we have, what a gift it is to feel energized by the ways we are existing in the world. And it for sure is not constant. You know, we're both running our own businesses and entrepreneurs, but when in kind of the right spaces and spending our energy or contributing our energy towards practices, activities, just ways of being that are aligned with our purpose, it feels like love for me.
Beautiful. Beautiful. So now I want to ask a little bit of a hypothetical. If we were to fast forward 5, 10, 15, 20 years, and you're at your next transition, where you're taking with you this purpose of connection and belonging, building spaces, experiences, but nothing else, none of the expectations, none of the this is what I should be doing, where might you transition to next?
Ooh, I have goosebumps. I love just the experience of being asked that. I have been dabbling as part of my own business around serving entrepreneurs, social entrepreneurs in particular, and helping them build and grow their businesses. And it's been sort of just enmeshed in what I do in my coaching and some consulting work I do. There might be more there. And that could be fun. I think there's also a more of a kind of modality of how I'm showing up in the world piece around writing. And so I do already have this present question of what can I share that would be a different type of meaningful contribution? Is there some possible book or, you know, larger writing endeavor that I want to undertake? And that itself, even if it's related to connection, belonging, to social impact, entrepreneurship, all of these things, the identity of writer feels really different. And I think I would have to move through a significant transition to get there. So now you have all of my secrets.
Thank you for sharing that, for being willing to go there. Because, you know, we look back at our transitions and they make perfect sense. We are where we are and we're dealing with it. But looking forward at transitions is always a lot of fun, too.
Bisan, can I ask you the same question back?
Ooh, yes. If I could let go of any of the expectations, the rules, and just take with me, you know, the phrase that I have for my purpose or what I hold on to is to have the human experience. And I think I would be on a farm. I think I would be in nature. I have back problems. I have no idea how that's going to work. But I would be like in this, like whether it's a retreat center or, yeah, a permaculture farm, I think I would be on the land.
I love that we're always planting seeds of possibility.
Yes.
Thanks for sharing that.
So before we wrap up, is there anything else that you want to clarify, share, something that we didn't get the chance to talk about?
I don't think so. I loved your questions, and I think this feels whole.
Wonderful, wonderful. So the closing question that I like to end all interviews with is, what is the legacy that you'd like to leave behind?
The legacy that I hope to leave behind, at least from right now, the vantage point I have, is really interconnectedness for as many possible people who are doing impact work across different issue areas, geographies, ages, identities. I think if I am, you know, way far in the future, fingers crossed, you know, looking back on life, and I know that I have contributed to an interweaving of people and the work that they do and their own sense of purpose in the world, and that they've each become braver and more supported and more themselves because of those connections and relationships, that feels like a life very well lived.
Alrighty, friends, thank you for listening to another episode of Lighter Impact. If this resonated with you, or you're curious about what it would look like to work with a social impact coach, please do reach out to me through my website, pauseimpact.org. Till next time, wishing you little moments of lightness and impact. Have a wonderful week.